Yeah, so my name is Adejare Adebowale. It's the best sporting show in the whole of universe. It's still Nielsen Center Sports. We don't have the game with us today, but of course, I have the grandmaster of football, like I like to call him. His name is Olawale Sabur. You want to introduce yourself to the viewers and listeners at home, Olawale?
Good day, listeners around the world. Welcome to the show. A lot of things happening in the footballing world we have to discuss. Congratulations to South Africa female national team becoming the third nation to win the African Women's Championship. Nigeria holds the record, I think 11 or 12 titles. Equatorial Guinea, they've won two. So this is South African first title, I think, in 5 attempts. Congratulations to the Bayana once again.
Wow, that's a long time coming anyways. I know usually the segment, this is a new stuff for us actually. We're streaming live on Twitter right now. So in case you want to see us, we're on Twitter right now, and you can drop your contribution, drop your comments as well on Twitter while we are at the goal right now. Usually we start with other sports, but I think, and Olawale will attest to that, we've been talking about other sport for quite a while, but looks like other sports is no interest right now. Every focus is on the start of the Premier League, which starts in another 13 days, and of course the La Liga, the Ligue 1, and of course what can we say again, the Serie A. And we'll be starting on the footballing front right now. I don't want to talk about KD and what is happening with Kyrie, or what is happening with the fact that Lusamati came out to say the toughest opponent that he had and did not put Max Verstappen in it, or what is happening in the boxing world right now. I don't want to talk about all of that right now, unless Olawale has other ideas in his big head, but I'm pretty sure Olawale does not as well. So we jump straight to the world of football. And Olawale, we should start with Ronaldo. Honestly, I feel Cristiano Ronaldo is probably one of the best footballers that ever graced football. No doubt about that. Maybe at the end of his career, he might not be in the top 10 of so many people, or top 5 or top 3 of so many people, but we can't deny the fact that Ronaldo has contributed immensely to the Ronaldo game. Highest goal scorer in the history of football, highest goal scorer in European Championship, highest goal scorer in the history of UEFA Champions League, among other records that he holds. But there seems to be a very bad snag with Ronaldo these days. He's being touted around the whole of Europe. He wanted City rejected him. Wanted PSG rejected him. Wanted Bayern, openly flirted with Bayern. Bayern rejected him. Wanted Atletico Madrid seems to be the next destination right now. And Atletico they have so many people on their books right now. They have to get off first before they can get a certain Cristiano Ronaldo. And I wonder what is happening with Ronaldo. It should not be so this difficult for a player of Ronaldo's caliber. And Ronaldo, I think he keeps forgetting something, that he's a 37-year-old man. He's no longer the Ronaldo of 10 years ago, or Ronaldo of even 5 years ago, you know. And I'm wondering, what's the solution out of this? And why is Ronaldo trying to sabotage himself, his own PR, all in the end that he doesn't want to play with United because United is playing at the Europa League? Now, he has a chance to win the Europa League. Right? What's your opinion about this,
Ali? Now, I think I don't have anything against Ronaldo if his ambition is to play in the Champions League. I just think it's the way and manner at which all these things being played out. Number one, if Ronaldo actually probably made up his mind that nothing will make him to play in the Europa League, I think he should have communicated this to United immediately. They couldn't qualify for the Champions League next season. But the body language wasn't like that. The body language was more of, I'm with this team, I'm here, and I'm going to... So that was why initially, when the story came out, I thought it was more of Ronaldo being like, protesting United not being, what do you call it, proactive enough in the transfer market, or not showing enough ambition, which probably I will have to agree with Ronaldo from that point of view. But again, players should realize they are always under, they have a contract which they have signed. whatever he thinks he's doing now still depends on if United grants him his wishes. Yeah. He still has yet left to play. If they decide not to play along with him, he can practically do nothing.
Exactly.
But again, due to the relationship, due to being the fan favorite, and you know, United don't want to be in the black books of an agent like Jorge Mendes, who you know in the future you probably want one or two of his players. So you want to be in their books. So that would be the only reason why they might probably just want to play along with him. But again, for somebody like Ronaldo, I just look at it. If you play in the Champions League this coming season, and if you probably end up winning it, it's a personal view. I don't think the number of people that probably consider Ronaldo as the greatest, or people that consider him better than Messi, I don't think that number is going to increase by any amount at all.
Yeah.
And I don't think that number is going to decrease if you don't play in the Champions League. For me, I think this just summarizes what the Ronaldo era is all about, which is apart from individuality, star-padded era. How many champions, how many goals did you score, how many assists, whereas football probably is actually more than that. But again, it's just summarize what this era is all about. What Ronaldo is all about is him trying to probably increase the number of goals he has in the Champions League. Probably if he has a chance of winning another time too. It's just, everything is just about just the record, which probably on one hand, if I look at I won't be angry with him. It's a personal ambition. But the other hand, there should be a limit. Like, I don't blame players wanting to join anything, but Ronaldo shouldn't be that desperate and be begging himself to play for a club be begging Atletico to play for them. Exactly. That should be the last club you want to be begging yourself to play for.
Exactly. So, exactly. Olani, before you continue, I just want to chip in for Atletico Madrid. Wouldn't Ronaldo be altering his own legacy with the Madrista? Ronaldo happens to be the highest goal scorer in the history of Real Madrid. Moving to Atletico Madrid would actually alt his status at the Madrid. And I start to be corrected. Even if Ronaldo wants to leave a club, wants to leave United and move to another team, an AC Milan will gladly have Ronaldo. An Inter Milan will gladly have Ronaldo. Why is he not trying those teams instead of trying to move to Atletico?
Now, the problem is this. The first question you even need to ask yourself, the top guys in Europe, probably Liverpool is a United legend. They don't want to have anything to do with him.
Yeah.
Why is Chelsea not signing him? Like, why is Bayern self rejecting him despite the fact that they've lost Lewandowski? Because it's going to be a selection dilemma for majority of these coaches, especially with the way most of these top teams want to play, especially with the fact that they don't consider it a 7-year-old as somebody who should be a regular starter, and which Ronaldo will not want to have. He consider himself that Ronaldo believes if he's in any team in Europe today, he should be a regular starter. Him not starting, it should be his personal decision, not the coach's decision. So these are all the dramas I think some of these top teams are avoiding and why they don't want to be part of it. So, and that's where I think he needs to have take a bit of introspection will have helped Ronaldo, looking at yourself very well, like as a 37-year-old, am I ready to be like not that regular starter at this age? Or if I'm in the shoes of the manager, will I want to probably sacrifice the long-term project of my team just to probably risk everything for a 37-year-old? So
exactly.
And from the legend point of view, there are two. For me, I'm even saying like he's losing from two sides. As much as most United fans will not probably be this, angry with him that he wants to leave. But again, the manner at which he has actually handled the whole situation, not reporting to training camp, not doing anything, will probably not go well with And at the same time, joining, like rightly said, begging yourself to go and play for Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid to Real Madrid is like let me say, the Clippers to the Lakers
in the city. Liverpool to Everton.
You understand? It's like a Liverpool legend begging himself to play for Everton. It's not done. It's not like he desperately needs that. Okay,
exactly.
Let's take a look at Van Persie. When Van Persie was at Arsenal, okay, he was desperate to move to United, giving himself a chance to win the league. Okay, fine. But what is Ronaldo desperately looking for to play for Atletico Madrid?
It was to play Champions League.
He just wants to add to the number of goals he has scored in the Champions League at all.
Exactly.
So I think that's just it. Exactly. I think this doesn't just summarize this era and who Ronaldo is for me.
Just before we do the Ronaldo topic, I would like to ask you one last question, and that's the fact that where should Ronaldo be playing his stage next season?
I'll probably want to answer the question from a Ronaldo point of view. Ronaldo should be playing in a team that is playing in the Champions League one, and probably has a reasonable chance. If you recall earlier last week he was linked to Sporting Lisbon, and Lisbon are playing in the Champions League. But I'm sure the reason why Ronaldo will not take that, probably because of the pay cuts. Even though 30% is a lot, but we are talking of Ronaldo's salary. We are not talking of Sadio Mane salary or this thing. Even at that 30% cut, not every club in Europe can afford to pay the remaining 70%. So that I think that's one of the reasons why Sporting Lisbon probably won't have a chance of signing him. Then number two is, what is their chances of probably getting to the latter stage or even having a shot at winning this? So I'm sure those are the two factors that will play a part. And that is why, as it stands today, since the big boys in Europe, the Bayern, the City, the Liverpool, are not looking at his direction, the dark horse of a team that he knows can probably give anybody the run for their money on any given night is Atletico Madrid. And I think that is the reason why he's pursuing this Atletico Madrid deal with everything.
You know, the funniest thing is the fact that even if Ronaldo decides to move to Atletico Madrid, we know Atletico Madrid is a negative playing football team. And discarding Luis Suarez to get Cristiano Ronaldo is not necessarily going to improve them or going to help them. Ronaldo likes to be fed. If you are not feeding Ronaldo, you are not feeding off that energy, Ronaldo will still be useless for Atletico Madrid. So even from a footballing standpoint of view, it does not even look like a good match to start with. I don't know if you agree with me.
I quite agree with you, considering the fact that Atletico Madrid is one of the most hardworking teams in Europe in the way they play. Of course, they have some this negativity about their style of play, but again, every player in that team works for the team. It needs to work out. When you talk about organization, they are one of those teams that rely more on the organization than the talent. So Ronaldo now not being able to offer that is going to be a short one to whatever style they want to play. So I don't even know how that one. So it's not a done deal yet. But again, let's see, because like you said, Atletico are probably looking at offloading Antoine Griezmann and probably Suarez or one of them before they can even have a realistic chance. You know, in La Liga, there is
a cap
to the wages and I think what you can spend in the transfer markets.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much for that, Lali. Moving forward right now, we'll be talking about Arsenal. And it's a good time to be an Arsenal fan. Sincerely, it's looking good from an Arsenal perspective. And you're looking at these guys, you're seeing them like, okay, these guys look to be pretty amazing right now with the way they are playing their football. But that being said, even with that being said, about how Arsenal is playing right now, the way Arsenal is playing right now, they are pretty doing very, very, very fantastic right now. And you see what guys like Jesus brings to the team, guys like Zinchenko that just came from Manchester City as well, you know, amongst other things. Realistically, Olali, looking at it from a strict footballing perspective, what do you think are the chances of Arsenal going into the season, especially the way they've played so far?
Let me say this. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but one thing that's probably is going to be going well for Arsenal at the moment is this. There's a bit of continuity in that team, and that's a very promising team that we saw last year, maybe a year more experience this season. Now what have they done? They've added more quality, whether we like it or not. Jesus is an upgrade to Alexander Lacazette, especially in terms of goals. We've seen it in the preseason, goal scoring. He has scored 4 goals so far in this preseason. I think Nketiah is going to be a very good backup. Martinelli is going to give them that threat from the left side and could be an option going forward. Generally, what I'm saying, if you look at the Arsenal team, they've added, I think the team is, it might not be over, let me say, they've added more depth, more quality to the squad than what they had last season. And I think they should be more experienced this season than where they were last season. Now, looking at the teams around them, of course, you can argue that we know Man City and Liverpool are no match for the other guys. But from what the way Chelsea ended last season and what we've seen of them this preseason, of course, things could still change. they look like They look like a team Arsenal can actually, what do you call it, compete with alongside Spurs. Still yet, we don't know what we will probably see of United. In summary, what I'm trying to say is this. I don't think Spurs and Chelsea are that better than Arsenal as it stands today, unless something changed from with those other teams. So I think they should fancy their chance going into this season. Players like Bukayo Saka, they've added another year experience. Those agony of missing out from Champions League last season, I'm sure they are going to learn from it. I expect them to be better. And I just feel like, I think the Zinchenko's transfer makes a lot of sense considering the injury history of Carantini. I just think probably they could have probably added a center back, but I don't think it is that something they desperately need to do.
Need center back again with William Saliba playing
exactly. Well. So I think they have a good team to at least fight for that third, fourth place in the place spot in the Premier League.
All right, perfect. Just before we move away from Arsenal, I still have like one or two questions from you. So right now, we have Maitland Niles. We have a player like Reece Nelson. We have Nicola Pepe. We have Sambi Lukonga as well. That looks not to be in the picture. That's Sambi scoring the last goal for Arsenal last night. We still have these guys. What do you think should be done to these guys? Arsenal, according to reports that we have, are not desperate to sell any of their players, not based on their terms. They'll rather keep those guys and pay their wages rather than sending them out for nothing or for peanuts. Do you think this guy should be kept in the squad, or which of these guys do you think should be kept in the squad while Arsenal are trying to do what they do best?
It's going to be, this is the point my mind is going to be key for Arteta. Now, realistically, Arsenal is going to be in the Europa League next season, and exactly. I think they should be trying to win it, to be competing there, and probably if possible they can win it. They should be going to that competition, like having that tournament, like setting a goal of, okay, we want to win this championship. So if you are playing in the Europa League, and considering that you will be traveling far to those Eastern European countries, Cyprus, Azerbaijan, and all those places, you need a bit of a large squad. You need a bit of a large squad. And I think this is where his man management and ability to rotate the squad, not really affecting, what do you call it, the flow in the team. And at the same time, being able to keep, what do you call it, those guys happy. The squad players happy. So that's where you could, and that's where people like Alex Ferguson have probably excelled in the past. Everybody is going to get his own minute at the right time. It's not every coach's thing. Conte is not really good at that. Jose Mourinho is not really good at that. Yeah. I think Pep Guardiola has actually excelled, at least in trying to make sure he keeps his squad very happy. So I think he needs to look at it. I think he needs to look at the squad critically and look at each person's role. Now, Pepe is not first choice. He's like second choice to Bukayo Saka. And probably we've not seen the Vieira lad from Porto. Even if Saka is not available, can they still get somebody else to play from that role? Could Smith Rowe play from there? Yeah. Can they probably make a bit of a... exactly. So those are the questions you need to ask before deciding on who to let go. To look at, okay, is this guy a direct replacement for a regular starter? And if so, or if not, if he thinks he has some other options, of course, you don't have a replacement for every role. But there are some roles, like you have four starting defenders. You probably don't need eight defenders in your team, probably six. And you have two of them who could probably play right back and center back. And you understand the way that... So, for me, I think he just needs to do a bit of... and he has to consider who is going to be a dressing room a problem if he's not playing. That's another thing. Some players are okay. They will show good attitude as long as they are playing. But some players, you see the other side of them the moment they are not getting enough playing time. So that's for Arteta to do a critical look of his team and probably make the right call.
All right. Perfect. Thank you very much for that, Olali. And moving ahead, we'll be talking about Chelsea. You know how I feel about Titi and the way he plays his football. I'm not the biggest fan of Titi. And by and large, for anybody I guess to listen, I would never agree with the fact that this Chelsea team is that bad. And I'm wondering, the life firepower, where did the firepower in terms of attacking option, and they let go of Lukaku for one reason or the other. Lukaku was not the first choice anymore. They let Lukaku off, thinking Kai Havertz could do the job for them, right? And from what we've seen from the preseason right now, Michel Batshuayi, Timo Werner, they are not improving. They are still that kind of player that we've known from yesteryears. How are you going to go into the season without a regular striker? That's number one. And number two, having a regular striker, like a player like in the striker of Lukaku, is not even the problem. They have the money to get the good strikers. But will his strategy, the strategy that he wants to employ, will he accommodate the choice of a good striker? Because it's one thing having a good striker, it's another thing to try to play football from the back with five defenders or whatnot, where the striker will be stifled of good and quality chances. That way, even if you have a Cristiano Ronaldo, he's not going to help you. And that's why I think that's why it's running away from Ronaldo, because Ronaldo could have been a Chelsea player by now if Titi actually wanted it, right? So what should be the way forward for Chelsea right now, honestly? Because I don't believe in the Titi way.
Now, sorry. Well, was that your first part of the question? Sorry, again.
Like, the way he wants to play his football, even if he has a even if I have a very good striker, is he going to help him?
Looking at the Chelsea
with his attitude and tactics.
Now, looking at the Chelsea team very well, if you watch Chelsea towards the end of last season, one thing was very obvious that the team is not good enough, especially in the attacking area. They seem to be short, and that's why I'm a bit confused about the way the Lukaku case has been handled. I don't think Lukaku is just a bad striker overnight. I felt like he did well prior to getting injured last season, and even when he came back from his injuries, he had a decent outing. From what I've seen so far, Chelsea will struggle to get goals, especially if they want to rely on a player like Kai Havertz or Timo Werner. These guys cannot be reliable when it comes to goal scoring. When I saw their game yesterday against Arsenal, he experimented with a 4-3-3 formation, and which a lot of people have been clamoring for. But formation apart, I can't probably see a system of this is how we want to play. This is how we intend to attack the opponent. This is how everything looks disjointed. No communication. The best attacking threat was from, what do you call it? Reece James. Messi Mount. I think I have a problem with his decision making. I think it's one of the reasons why Lukaku was actually frustrated last season. Most people don't see it, but I saw it a lot of times. Lukaku pointing and expecting his pass somewhere. Mount going for those long distance shots and some of those things. So I just think the team itself needs to define how they want to play, how they want to attack. Everything as it is looks disjointed. And from the performance yesterday, I just think Titi will revert back to his trusted 3-5-2, or what I probably want to call a 5-3-2. Yeah, because see, having that extra attacking player instead of that defensive player didn't give them any advantage yesterday. We didn't see any impacts of that. So I think for now, the safest thing for him to do, while still trying to figure it out, is to go back to that 3-5-2. Rely more on what with James, Ben Chilwell, if Alonso is still going to remain, what they could offer you from those flank position. And that is where I think even this 3-5-2 could have been better off with a Lukaku or a center forward, if you are very sure of those good deliveries from Chilwell. You just write off your, because that middle and the center forward position, for me, it's nothing to write home about, because they will struggle a lot. They might likely have a lot of games, you know, games that ideally should have probably ended 2-1, 2-0, might probably be dragging to a 1-1 draw because of the inability of some of their strikers. Because I don't know the reason why he's going into this season still trusting Kai Havertz. Yes, after that first season, I personally felt Kai Havertz should be given a chance. But with what I saw of him last season, it is not that kind of guy that will be consistent. Of course, he could score some of those flashy goals once in a while. Gives you breaks here and there. But he has the potential of going a longer spell without scoring goals. Coupled with the fact that Chelsea as a team itself doesn't create enough quality chances. So you could see the mismatch. a mismatch from a player that doesn't score much, then playing a team that doesn't create enough chances.
Yeah, so Olali, that leads me to my next question. Why is Chelsea not in the market for a creative midfielder? Because it looks like they are lacking two things. A quality striker and a creative midfielder. They have the wingers already. So why not in the market for one?
Probably he felt he could get those creativity within reach. Gallagher, the guy that was on loan at Crystal Palace, so far this preseason, he looks underwhelming so far. He's not been, I've not really seen much of him. Messi Mount has always been touted as that guy everybody thinks can do it, but with what I've seen of Messi Mount, is that kind of a midfielder that will probably give you those contribution from, like, it makes your midfield a bit a typical Lampard type of player. It gives your midfield a bit of solidity, but when it comes to creativity, I don't think he really has it. Even though you could see some of those flashes once in a while, but the last thing you want from your creator is a once in a while performance. You want somebody who could do it, makes the right decision. So I from what you said, I think they should have probably, I don't know why they didn't probably go for Christian Eriksen. Because it's actually a low risk. You are signing him for free. If it doesn't even work, you don't have anything to lose. I think Christian Eriksen will have improved that they are attacking him. And of course, it could have even allowed him to play a 3-5-2, because one of the issues they are having presently now is this. If you play Mason Mount now, the way he plays Mason Mount is like playing him as a front three alongside with either Sterling and Kai Havertz, or what do you call it, or Smovena. Now, Mason Mount cannot stretch play from the wings.
100%.
The reason why Antonio Conte 3-4-3-5-2, but he modified it to 3-4-3, worked was this. Hazard and Pedro stretch the opponent a lot. It's as good as you are playing a 4-3-3. I think that Conte's formation was a cheat. That 3-4-3 was a pure cheat. Because
he
has Hazard still playing very close to the box. You have Pedro still playing very close to the box. And somehow, somewhere, you still have a reliable five at the back.
Yeah, and he has a very creative midfielder in.
You understand? So what is missing in that team now is, you can see the Pulisic, the Ziyech. These are guys who naturally should provide that width from the distance, from the flank, but they've been disappointing so far. So when you play Mason Mount, he's not a natural guy to stretch play. So rather, he's more of like, he's a third guy in the middle of the pack. Now making the formation more of like a 3-5-2. But a 3-5-2 not with the two center forward. A 3-5-2 with one winger and a center forward. So it's a whole lot of confusion. And I think Eriksen could have solved a lot of their creativity issue. That's why I was surprised. That was why I was surprised they were not even mentioned among the teams trying to sign Chris Eriksen. I think Chris Eriksen could have fancied going to London, playing in London, rather than Manchester.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Olali, just before we leave Chelsea, why did Titi run away from the Ronaldo deal? Is it because Ronaldo is too egotistical? He does not want a team division, or because of high press? Or because now I don't see so many goals in the team. Rudiger has gone. Rudiger had a couple of goals for them last season. You know, it might be a potential snag for them going into the season, and it will be disastrous for Chelsea if they are buying against a team like Arsenal and Spurs for the fourth position. They should be in line with the City and the Liverpool, not United, Arsenal, and Spurs.
yeah, Titi himself made mention of it after that the lesson Arsenal gave them yesterday. He said they should never be mentioned as a stand now with Liverpool and what do you call it. Now, going to your question about why he ran away from signing Ronaldo, I think I was a bit surprised that that deal didn't go through. Because if there was a team that needs a goal scorer, not really that hardworking player, I think it's Chelsea. They don't have a striker. I think they could have made do of Ronaldo. It's a kind of a guy that probably doesn't need many chances to register goals. And I think Ronaldo would have benefited from accurate pinpoint crosses from Ben Chilwell
and James Rees.
But this is what I think. Somewhere in the mind of Titi, he has extreme confidence in, what do you call it? Kai Havertz. Which for me, I don't. I can't trust Timo Werner. And I don't think Kai Havertz is a, what do you call it? I don't think he's a reliable goal scorer like that too.
Exactly.
He's not that kind of a guy that will give you those big numbers that you want from a striker. So
the problem is goals are not going to come from other side of the pitch. Last season, I think people get carried away with what happened with Mason Mount last season. He hit a double figure, but he scored like six of those goals against Norwich.
That's a context that sometimes we don't look at, and that was why somebody was, when people like said Ronaldo scored like 17, like up to 17, someone made mention of the thing that probably I had to have a rethink, like, okay, hat trick against like couple of those goals were against like three opponents or four opponents. It wasn't like, but again, it's not like I'm blaming Ronaldo for United not scoring much. That's a bigger issue for United. But like you said, it does, like, if majority of those goals, of Mason Mount's goals contribution, was against few teams, like two or three teams, then it doesn't really make sense having to rely on such, what do you call it? And I think, again, I think he just wants to have a control of the squad. He wants to be in charge of that team. I don't think he wants to be in a position whereby he wants to play in a different manner and he's going to bench Ronaldo. And at every press conference or fans forum, he needs to answer that question. Why is Ronaldo not starting? Why was he not? Because when you have such players, those are the questions. I think he just wants to have a control of his team and he wants to have his sanity. But again, it could still backfire. But I just think Chelsea probably before the end of, why I'm not writing them off is the transfer window will still close on August 31st. So, I still think there will be enough time for them to look at that squad and say, no, we need to get a striker. I think one other thing we are probably overlooking is this. From Chelsea point of view, yeah, they've signed some couple of players, but I think they are really suffering from the old management that left with Roman Abramovich, that lady that was in charge of their transfer. I can't remember those guys' name. These are guys who are familiar with the European transfer market. And I think their presence in terms of negotiation and contact they are really missing it now. And with their owner actively involved, I don't have anything against him, but I just don't think he has enough experience when it comes to dealing with all these European footballing agents. It's a different ball game to what is applicable in America. So,
all right, perfect. Just before we leave Chelsea, it looks like I'm very stuck with Chelsea to the other end. I'm sorry about that. I know you want to talk about Man United. Yeah, itchy to talk about them. But just before we leave Chelsea, I look at Raheem Sterling, and I'm not a prophet of doom, but I want to agree with someone that said, looks like City sold Chelsea a Sterling that is not so Sterling. Do you agree with that assertion, or we should not be carried away yet?
Well, what one thing about the Sterling thing is this. Even while he was at City, his goal scoring record, if you look at it, you could probably say, wow, his goal scoring record is not that bad. As in, if you want to compare it to the way it's being perceived by fans around the league. But again, Sterling is one of those frustrating figures. I think Sterling, for me, I think he has a one of my issues with him is his decision making. His decision making is a bit suspicious, especially for a player playing in that advanced role. You need to be precise. You need to be you don't have to be double guessing about some certain things. You know when to take on players. You should know when to release a pass. You should know when to shoot. These are things at times that are not consistent when it comes to Sterling's game. Like I said, decision making and consistency has been a major problem with Sterling. I think Sterling has benefited from a stable City team. If the Guardiola style of play, he has really benefited a lot from it in the past, which I think he might struggle to replicate those forms. Those kind of form at Chelsea. Generally, the way Chelsea as a team, the way they play, if they don't improve the way they play, I don't see Sterling carrying out any major match. And if you look at last season, for the bigger parts of last season, it wasn't really starting. They have a Grealish who could actually play from that left side too, and they still have a Foden too, who could play from the left or play from the right. I think I don't know why Guardiola wanted to trim his squad, but I think he just probably decided this season that he wanted to probably have a bit of a smaller squad, and probably with the Argentine Alvarez coming in. So, like you rightly pointed out, I have my doubts if he's going to replicate that kind of form. If he's going to do that, it's going to be that Chelsea as a team we have to improve a lot in terms of. Significantly in the way they play, the way the movements, the exchange of passes between their midfield and attack. Because as it stands now, it's just the Chelsea midfield, the Chelsea attack as it stands presently, probably will beat a poor side. But it's going to drop a lot of points against decent sides.
The Aston Villas of this world.
Exactly. So,
just before we go, we'll move to Manchester United. As it stands today, is Chelsea ready for the league?
You said, is Chelsea ready for the league?
As it stands today, No,
they are not ready to compete. As it stands today, okay. I don't think they're better than Arsenal, and I don't think they're better than Spurs. Like I said, things can still change before the beginning of the season.
All right, perfect.
Looking at their attack, I think Spurs and Arsenal has a better, not even individual now. They have a better collectively in terms of the way they play. This is where we want to attack our opponents. I think they have a better idea collectively compared to Chelsea. Not to even have to come and talk about individual strengths of their forward players.
All right. Perfect. So we'll move to your boys' issue, which seems to be like a transfer saga off season long. And it's the issue of no other person than Frankie de Jong. His coach come out today to say, and that's Xavi Hernandez come out to say that he wants to play him as a central back. And when I saw that comment, I think you posted that comment as a matter of fact, or Tayo did, I don't know who did. And what that refers me back to is what Pep Guardiola did to Yaya Toure when he went to send Yaya Toure out. Keita does not look like a better player than Yaya in any way, form, or fashion. But somehow, Yaya was playing not as six, he was playing as their number five as a central defender. And that was the beginning of the end of Yaya at Barcelona. Do you think Xavi is coming out to say indirectly that because out of the post as well, he was saying based on economical factor, he's a key player, but based on economical factor, he probably needs to leave. And okay, so that was my first question. And second question is Barcelona laundering money? They don't have money to pay wages. They don't have money to sign players. But magically, Barcelona is doing everything. I think probably they spend more money than even Arsenal this offseason. And somehow, this is the same club that is renting out their stadium for parties. It does not seem to align in any way, form, or fashion. So my first question is this the beginning of the end for Frankie de Jong? That the coach is saying, guy, you can't stay here any longer. We don't need you anymore. We need this money. And at the same time, how is Barcelona doing it? You're an accountant. Maybe you can give us an insight. I don't understand.
Okay. Now, let's start from the Frankie de Jong case. Now, I don't even think it's actually disrespectful on the part of Xavi to have probably uttered that statement, because I think for somebody like him, for a kind of player who like doing his playing days that we knew how Xavi plays, you should never consider playing a player like Frankie de Jong. It's an insult on the talent of Frankie de Jong, in as much as you might feel like, I think Frankie de Jong has probably found himself in a very difficult situation. Number one, they still fancy Busquets, but my own question is, for how long will Busquets even last that you can't play Frankie de Jong ahead of him in that role? One. Now, I think the problem Frankie de Jong is having present. Yeah. The problem Frankie de Jong is having presently now is this. Xavi would rather play those boys from La Masia Academy. Just like you said, what happened to Yaya Toure? You know, there is this thing like coaches feel it gives them more credit. Academy, exactly. Especially when that talent is very obvious. So I think that's one of the issues Frankie is facing. I think number two is, I think a lot of people are not happy with Frankie de Jong's contract. Looking at the money he's making and what he's going to make, like, even if Bartomeu is actually not in his senses when he was signing those players, you can't still believe the figures we are getting from.
Thrown around.
For the coach to have said such thing, then you don't have it's very simple. You don't have, I don't need you in my team again, just leave. I now attack the economic situation. So I think if not the fact that there is something behind this contract that he's trying to get back, then I don't think there's any disrespect that is more than a coach telling you that he has ruled himself out as an option in midfield. If a coach is telling you that I like him as an option in defense, a team that has natural central defenders, you think they will now? So they are telling him to find a club and leave. And probably on the part of Frankie, probably United is not that kind of club he feels he should be moving to now, and he has not really got enough suitors. Probably if Chelsea at this stage show a bit of interest. And there are reports coming out from Spain that he might be ready or prepared to take a huge pay cut. From Sports. We don't know how reliable that is. That if he takes the pay cut, then that will be end of the United, what do you call it, saga. But whichever way it is, for me, I think beyond United, I think he has been disrespected a lot with those comments, and with actually, because against Inter Miami, he didn't start. He came in the second half and played center half position. So For me, if I was to be in his position, I don't think, even if my childhood dream was to play for Barcelona, I think he just need to leave Barcelona because it's as good as they don't want him there again. So, so for me, but we have to wait. He could probably play for Chelsea. He probably end up in United. But if Frankie de Jong eventually doesn't come to United, I think that's a big hell for Erik ten Hag and United. But because from what we are hearing is that it is either De Jong or nothing. Like ten Hag said, he would rather look inward and bring up somebody to fit into that system rather than going for a plan B. But again,
why
we see a lot of
Ruben Neves.
Probably Ruben Neves is not that kind of midfielder that probably dictates that. It's not a deep line playmaker. It's not a Pelu. Probably is not. I'm not saying he's a bad passer of the ball. Neves to me is more of a CM than a DM. It's not like Sergio Busquets. It's not like a Rodri. It's not a Michael Carrick. I think that is what United is looking for. Somebody to transit the ball seamlessly. He's not a DM, but he could play as a deep line playmaker. Some people will tell you that Michael Carrick was not a DM.
But yeah, Michael Carrick wasn't a DM. It wasn't a DM until he came to Manchester United. It was an attacking midfielder.
But if you see the way he played, even in that position, it's not your typical DM, that enforcer marker like that. He relies much more on his intelligence to read the ball, make sure the people that have to get the ball get the ball.
I disagree with you. I don't think Ruben cannot play that role. I don't know why they are so stuck on Frankie De Jong. This is going to be the problem.
I think the Ten Hag decision.
Because if they get stuck on Frankie and Frankie decides to move to a Chelsea, because Chelsea actually needs it, or to another team entirely, what becomes of United going into the season without Mark Fred?
I think that it's a big risk for them to have stayed this long on this transfer like this. If you are not signing this kind of, because the problem now is if you are even going for Neves now or Yuri Tillman, they are going to be very expensive because Leicester City and Wolves they actually know that you guys are very desperate as it stands now. So it doesn't, for me at this stage, it's either they get him or they take a big L. So going to the second part of the question about the Barcelona that the world kept secret in football is that Barcelona are having financial issues, and La Liga is even dealing with them with their salary cap and the cap spend on transfer. I think this is what Laporte is doing with his management. They are presently gambling on mortgaging the future. Now what they plan is to sell 25% of their future TV rights at least for the next 25 years. So what they are looking at is from that money, they could raise as high as a 500 million, at least 500 million euros from there and spend it on the current team to make the current team better. And they think if the current team is better, if they start winning, a lot of sponsors will start coming in. The fans probably will buy more merchandise with this and that. What people are looking at is people who are probably spoken in favor of this is they are looking at it from the time value money, point of view. Like, 41 million pounds today is probably better than 60 million pounds in some years' time. So they believe if you could hand the money now, of course, and if that could transform the team. But again, beyond beyond the value of money. You have to look at the future cash flow, which means your expected cash flow in the nearest future is what you've already spent now. So by the time you get to those years, how do you meet up with your obligation around that time? Because it is like somebody is trying to, it's a big risk. It's like somebody is just trying to shift his, what do you call it, the doomsday forward. Because, I don't know how that now, because this the 25% they are selling now is based on the current value of the La Liga's, what do you call it, TV rights. So we don't know how is it going to work. What if La Liga is priced better in the nearest future? What does it mean to what Barcelona will eventually earn? Does it affect? I don't know. Is the contract going to be based on the value? Is it going to be that like now, if a TV company that is paying for something in 25 years too, they are paying in advance the money that they could have used probably to invest in some other things and make money. If they are giving it to Barcelona, I'm sure they are giving it to them at the present current price of the league. So whichever, even if now, if the value of the league increases, I'm not sure they are going to pay Barcelona anything more to that. You understand? Now, 25%.
But only if it happens like this and there's another pandemic, maybe in the next 10 years, like
that Barcelona could be of gain.
Barcelona have gotten more than they're supposed to get.
There are two ways. There are two ways to eat. It could either work in their favor or put the club in trouble in the nearest future.
At that time, I'm pretty sure the sponsors will get the money back from them. That we paid.
Because what some people are saying is this. Now, if 25% of, let me say, the La Liga in 10 years' time is, if 25% of the La Liga in 10 years' time is 40 million as it is today. Now, anybody taking up the contract will take it at that 40 million. Because I'm giving you the cash now. Now, if the reality is not like the money is now 70 million, that's a whole lot of 30 million loss. To Barca. So it's a two-way thing. But I think they are desperate to rebuild the team now. Because I think they don't want to go far behind the top teams in Europe. Like City, Bayern, Real Madrid of this world, and Liverpool. So I don't think they want to get that far behind. They want to get back as soon as possible. But again, it's something that could work and it's something that might not work. So that's what they've been doing. And that's why a lot of people are a bit like, initially, where are they getting this money? So what they are doing is they want to mortgage
I wonder why Bartomeu is not in prison right now, anyways. Moving on to other things. Still on Barcelona, anyways. Barcelona have agreed fee and personal times with Jonas Koundé of Sevilla for 55 million euros. How far that is true, we cannot ascertain at this point of time. But from reliable sources, it's saying they've agreed terms and personal terms and fee with Sevilla. Sevilla came out on Saturday to debunk the fact that they've not agreed fee with either Chelsea or Barcelona for Koundé. Figures are crossed right now, and let's see what is going to happen. All right, just before we go on the show, and congratulations to Asisat Oshoala. Is it Oshoala or Oshoala?
Oshoala, I think, I don't know. Is it a Yoruba name?
Oshoala, I am not sure. Oshoala are winning the female African Footballer of the Year for the fifth time running. One Mane won the male version of
Before we leave, is this this is the African Footballer of the Year or what? Are we still going to have another African Footballer of the Year at the end of the year, in December or January?
I don't think so. I think probably they are making it come. They are actually doing this because of the World Cup or whatever. But according to the news and reports, they said this is the African footballer of the year. But you know how AFCON does that thing. They are never consistent with anything. So, Olale, I have a question for you. William Saliba. The young Arsenal defender, we know is of a perceived quality. No doubt about it. We saw what he did with the French league last season. He was the best young player in the French league last season as well. And you look at him, and you look at Ben White, you look at Gabriel, and you look at Rob Holding. Ordinarily, who should be starting for Arsenal in the middle of the park? Should Saliba Kamens be taking over the ball playing of Ben White? Looks like Arteta is stuck on playing one left-footed center back and a right-footed one. I think he's stuck on that. I don't know why. Maybe that's the new thing in football. But with Saliba coming with serenity and calmness, should he be taking over Ben White? Because Ben White seems to be his main opposition.
I think Ben White did okay for me last season. For me, I think you can just if Arteta feels Saliba has something to offer to the first team now, you can ease him into the team. You can rotate them. Of course, Ben White must not play all the games. You can, because one thing you need about your center half is that you need understanding. Your two center halves need to understand themselves very well. So you can probably use, for me, I don't think somebody has to be permanently be on the bench for the other. You can interchange them oftenly. When at a point in time, United had Rio Ferdinand, Nemanja Vidic, Phil Jones, yes, Chris Smalling, Johnny Evans. And I could still recall that in as much as those guys, although, yes, Ferdinand was already getting old, or even Vidic, but in as much as everybody had a decent number of games, yeah, and we saw different combination. We saw Ferdinand Vidic, we saw Evans Vidic, we saw Jones Ferdinand, different combinations. So I don't see why he can't do that. But again, he has to be very smart to see games. You can start some of this combination. You can start experimenting with some of this combination in pre-season and with Europa. And that's what the Europa League gives to you, especially the group stage. In games that this is where you can start experimenting. Harry Kane came to limelight not because he was scoring in the league. Spurs were using Harry Kane. They were playing him in the Europa League, and he was scoring consistently. So that was what gave the then manager, was it Tim Sherwood or whoever? I can't remember. Now to draft him into the main team and see what he could offer. So that's one advantage, what do you call it, the Europa League serves. You can use it to test a lot of things. So for me, I think it's not a matter of somebody sitting permanently for another. He could interchange these guys regularly, and everybody's going to have a decent minute. And you keep a very, because where you need a live squad at times, when injury hits your team, sometimes you can't even predict it. Look at City last season. Despite the depth of their defense, at a point in time they were short of defenders. Even with their depth, they were short of first team defenders. What do you call it? John Stones was injured. Kyle Walker was injured. Laporte was injured. Ruben Diaz, and they were probably struggling to get starting 11. Just now imagine a team that probably just have 5 feet center backs, and you have like four of them injured. That was what happened to Liverpool the other season, that they started playing midfielders at the center back position. For me, I think it's not a bad idea. It just has to come to his own management skills, getting the best out of those guys, know when to introduce them, stick with what do you call it, Ben White for now, then find a way of introducing Saliba gradually, either through the Europa League. See what he will offer in the Europa League.
Perfect. Just before we go, and that will be the last one, is Lisandro Martinez coming to United. He's showing on your screen right now. Wonderful defender, left-footed. are we looking at Lisandro from the left full back position or from the left side of the center defense for the new,
of course,
for the new season?
For course, it's going to be center back. It's going to be a center back pairing. Number one, Varane injury situation is, from what we saw Varane last season, you can probably rely on him to stay fit. And after Varane, every other person in that center back position, they have been very suspicious. From Victor Lindelof, who doesn't look as sure to me, to Harry Maguire and probably Eric Bailly. So I'm seeing, what do you call it, Lisandro Martinez slotting in directly into the starting 11. And one thing you have to appreciate about Lisandro Martinez is a press averse player, a press resistance player, like that is a kind of a player that can be calm and get the ball to the right person even when it's under pressure, the opponent are pressing him. So I think, and considering the fact that United have signed Malaysia, which even though I don't think he's going to start ahead of Luke Shaw, but it looks more like he's going to rotate that side with Luke Shaw. So I don't see any reason why Lisandro Martinez will not add to that side again, making it like three fullbacks. So I think,
is he going to be playing, or could he play from the central midfielder, a little bit advanced, living the defense?
Yes, of course. With somebody with a Dutch football, what do you call it? Football training, orientation.
Training.
Yeah. You know, one thing about the Dutch football orientation is their total football, where most of their players could probably fit into multiple positions. So a right back could probably play as a right winger or as a CM. A center back should be able to play as a CM or as a, you understand? They actually, one thing about players that probably grew up in the Dutch league is their versatility. So, which I think is not going to be a problem. He could probably play, but I don't think Eric Ten Hag wants to deploy him as a CM or as a left back. I think he wants to play him directly as a center half.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much, Olale, for your time and for joining us today. So we'll see you again next week. My name is Sir Ajeja Adebowale, and it's still News in South Sport. Please, guys, like us, stream us, and please download and don't go anywhere, guys.